all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio. Welcome to the Veterans Radio inaugural premiere podcast presentation. There I was, coming to you from VFW Post 423. That's right, VFW Post 423 in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. And now, your host for tonight, Slicks Pilot, 195th Sky Chief Dale Thronberry. Ah, yes.
All right.
Take it, Dale.
I got it. All right. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. This is a really special evening for all of us that came up with this idea for There I Was. The idea came from a program that I had heard about in Washington, D.C. That's called ASAP. And it was for veterans who are suffering from post-traumatic stress, other mental issues, emotional issues, and so forth. And what they wanted to do was they came up with a program where they would sit down and they would actually write out a comedy routine based on their experiences in the service. And so they had to write a 5-minute stand-up act. And they would take weeks and weeks to do this, and once they were finished, they had to perform it at a comedy club in Washington, D.C., which I thought was kind of cool. But knowing many of the people that I do around here, I didn't think we would be able to go to a comedy club and tell our stories. I thought it would be really fun to just tell our stories, because many times we've told our stories to our families, and that's about it. And they don't want to hear it again, and most of our friends don't want to hear them again. But most of us have not heard all of these stories. So all we decided to do, along with Larry St. Antoine and Scott Brooksmiller, he's got so many names. Anyway, unfortunately, Scott is not able to be here tonight because he had an emergency gallbladder removal. And, you know, some people will get out of do anything to get out of public speaking. But, so we just kind of put this idea together to bring together veterans from all over the county, men, women, all generations. We were hoping to get, people from Korea all the way up through Afghanistan, Iraq. That's what we want to get to, where people can tell these stories. So today, or tonight's program, is going to be about how did you get into the service? Were you drafted? Were you enlisted? Or was it other? And the audience that we have here tonight, probably there are a few others in there. But back in the day, as they used to say, or they say now because we're old, is that if you got in trouble with the local police, that the judge would offer you the option of going to juvenile hall or prison or enlisting. And many people decided to take the enlistings part of it, which is kind of crazy. But anyhow, so what I wanted to start off with basically is to tell you a little bit about my story, give you a little example of what happened with me. And on July 16th of 1967, I got a letter from the President of the United States saying, come on down and take a physical. And I said, I don't need a physical. No. And it didn't work, and I did everything I could to avoid it. I had a football injury, and I banged my knee so it would swell up, and it didn't swell up. And so I go down to Newark, New Jersey, which is sort of like Detroit, only worse in some cases. And there I was with 500 of my closest friends walking around in our underwear with a little folder, and people are looking in parts of you that nobody's ever looked at before or since. And at the end of this whole traumatic event, I felt like I was sitting on the end of the bench in Alice's restaurant, and, you know, with this guy who's, I don't know what he had taken, but he was just flying all around the building the whole time I was there. The doctor comes out and he says, comes up to me and gives me the stamp and goes, boom, he says, you pass. I go, God, oh, now what am I going to do? And I said, how long have I got? And he says, 6 weeks. He says, we'll get you in 6 weeks. And so I immediately ran down to the recruiters. No offense to anybody in our audience that was in the infantry, but it was not my ideal location I wanted to be in if I was going to have to be in a war. Now, I have to remind people that my father was in World War II, so I had been taught, you know, that if you're called, you go. and so forth. And I said, okay, I'll do that. So I went down, and the Navy had a six-month waiting period. That didn't work. The Air Force had a six-month waiting period because I figured, 25 miles offshore or 25 miles up, that's good, right? The Marines, they said I could go that day because I could be a lieutenant. And I liked their uniforms, but the idea was, I said, well, no, I really can't because I have a date tonight, and left. And then I went down to the Army guy, and he said, I'd like to be a pilot. I said, ooh, yeah. Of what? And he said, helicopters. And I went, I've seen one of those. Sure, why not? Do I have to take a test? And so forth. He says, yeah, you have to take this aptitude test. So I go in and I take the aptitude test. And basically the aptitude test was a lot of math stuff, which I was okay on. And then they had this book, which they still use. I was talking to a current helicopter pilot. And inside the book are these pictures of looking outside the cockpit window. And they want to know if you're going up, down, an ascending turn to the left, a descending turn to the right, so on and so forth. And so you're picking up, you pick up the book because you got to do this. You got to go, oh, okay, so I'm looking at a moving and going, and of course the guy in the back of the room goes, like he got thrown out. But, so I passed. Yay! So now I have to go to, Fort Polk, Louisiana. Well, Fort Polk, Louisiana was the birthplace of the combat infantry man for Vietnam. Some of you probably did AIT there and all that other stuff. And this big sign is actually there. And I said, well, I think there's a mistake. And they said, no, everybody goes to Tigerland. And that's my first time I ever heard the growl. So I had to fly down to Fort Polk. When my mother found out that I had to fly on an airplane for the very first time in my life, that I had to wear a suit. I'm going in the Army, Ma, type of thing. So I don't care, son, it's a sign of respect, all this other stuff. And I said, I don't think they're going to respect me if I wear a suit, to get into the Army. She says, you're wearing a suit. So I have this wool suit, the funeral suit that teenagers have. So I get on the plane, fly down to New Orleans, get off of a real plane, get on something called Trans Texas Airlines, which is sort of like Treetop Airlines. And you go from point to point to point. I think we landed six times between New Orleans and Leesville, Louisiana, which is somewhere in northwest Louisiana, if I remember right. Better known as Fleesville after I was there for a while. And so I get off of the airplane and get on the first time I get on an Army bus, and then you get off the bus and you get on a truck, and, they kind of moving you around in all types of different kinds of transportation. And I finally get to the company area where I'm supposed to report in. I guess it's part of their induction center. And as I get off the bus, Sergeant Steele, I'll never forget this man in my whole life. He's the biggest guy I've ever seen. And he looked at me getting off the bus with a suit and a tie on. And he tells his friends, he goes, hey, we got a suit. And so the next thing I know is that I am, he likes my suit so much that he wanted to know how I could do push-ups in my suit. So I started my many, many push-ups that we all did in basic training along the lines. And when I was done, he said, I want you to go out in the middle of that parking lot and stand on number 75. There's 300 numbers out in this parking lot. So I go out to number 75 and I find it and I stand there and now what do I do? And he just said, no, just stand there. And then it started to rain. And so my wool suit, I could feel shrinking on me as we're going along. And that's how I got into the service. What a wonderful welcome to the United States Army and Fort Polk, Louisiana. We'll go into basic training next time.
Yeah.
So that's it for that particular story. So that's the idea of what we're looking for, something like that. It doesn't have to be that you have to go through the whole stages, but something that you could take and go off on a tangent about what happened while you were on your way to wherever you were going to be stationed and so forth. And so start thinking about those. All right, we have our first volunteer here. I got the list here. And...
And? Who is it, Dale?
It is Bob Kurtz. And Bob was in the United States Air Force, and he was a technical sergeant. Wow, what rank is that? What number is that? E6. All right, an E6. So, Bob, why don't you come on up and just tell us your story? Yay!
Well, my name's Bob Kurtz. And during my high school years, things were a little different than the high school years of today, that's for sure. Everybody knew what they had to do to try to avoid going into the Army. Going into the Army was not something I wanted to do. My dad was a World War II Army vet, and he hated the Army. He told us, whatever you do, don't join the Army. So I decided to go to school and get a deferment after I graduated from high school. Of course, I had to take a physical just like everyone else and then let them know that, yes, I am 4F. That meant that at any moment you could go into the Army. Now, my dad, he didn't understand this whole draft. Then the lottery came out when I was at Michigan State. And guys would rather commit suicide than go to Vietnam. So you had to be careful walking around tall buildings. Never knew what was going to be flying through the air. Those were the good old days. Then, if you knew somebody from Canada that also had gotten drafted, yes, he was a Canadian citizen, you could go with him to Canada. His father had a farm. And I know several guys that went there. But I decided that I would take one of the services, pick the best one, of course. It was the Air Force. And I got out of the Army, all right. I stayed in the Air Force for 20 years. I actually enjoyed it. It was like a job. Although we were the worst marchers, I have to admit. Air Force marching down the street. What a sight. It's embarrassing to even think about it, the parades that I was in. Wow. But getting back to being drafted, when they came out with that lotto number, it would be posted on the front page of every newspaper across the country as to what number they were calling up. Now, I was fortunate I had a fairly high number. But I was unfortunate because I lived in Ann Arbor. And they wanted to take everybody from Ann Arbor right to the number 365. What a disgrace. They even knew I was from Ann Arbor when I got to basic training. It was terrible. Oh, talk about being picked on. Holy crow. Anyway, I survived. 2 weeks into basic training, I got my draft notice for the Army. That's how close I cut that. My dad never understood why I was joining the Air Force. I was at a bad time, but those were bad times. Those were not great times. Nobody liked that war, that conflict, or whatever the hell they call it today. It was terrible. Knowing that when you turn 18, you were going to be 4F. Yeah, those were the days. I'm glad they're over. I'm glad you only have to sign up for the draft and not actually have one. Yeah, these are good times. And a lot of us sacrificed our time for these today.
Thank you. I feel obligated to change one thing. I think you were talking 1A versus 4F. 4F meant you're out. You didn't have to go in at all. And then you would, if you were a student, you were a 2A, I think is what it was. And then as soon as you left school for any particular reason, man, they had you as 1A right away. And then you'd get the letter. So, thank you very much. It was too bad. I know when I was in Vietnam. Some of us here were in Vietnam in 69 when the drafts, they started pulling the numbers. So we had a draft party. And we, you know, of course, I think my number was number 18 or 19. I go, oh my God, they're going to draft me and send me to Vietnam again. Just because. So this is what we're trying to do. Thank you very much, Bob, for being a volunteer to go first. This is what we want. We want to hear your stories. We want to hear what it was like. What made you decide to join the service instead of, you know, making the run for Canada or wherever it was? I think I said this the other day. I got an email from a friend of mine who was in my unit in Vietnam, and he was talking about that he had avoided the draft. And I'm going, how did you avoid? What do you mean you avoided the draft? You were in Vietnam with me. And he goes, no. He says, I avoided the draft because I enlisted, and then they sent me to a foreign country. I said, yeah, but it was the wrong country. He said, still, I'm out of the country, and I didn't get drafted. I said, no. I think he was from Connecticut or something like that. It must have, that would explain a lot of it. But anyhow, all right, so we're going to move right along to our next one. And this one is an Army guy. This is John Kinzinger. And John Kinzinger is in the United States Army, and he was a Spec 4. Or were you a corporal?
No,
Specialist 4. John Kinzinger, yay!
Bring it down to my size. There you go. Belleville High School, 1964, June. I was 17 years old. A month later, I turned 18, started working at Ford Motor Company. I was making more money than my father. I had a new car. I loved chasing women. I had no responsibility. I was living at home. And then Uncle Sam came along and wrecked it all. Here I was, 19 and a half, and I got this letter. I just didn't think they'd want me, you know, but at that time in February of 66, they wanted everybody. Everybody, if you could breathe and walk, you qualified. Didn't matter how tall you were, how much you weighed, they took care of all of that. So here I was, standing over my letter and trying to, my father didn't serve in the military, so I didn't have that behind me. He had been injured when I was a kid and didn't qualify for service in World War II. But I didn't know what I was doing. I sort of was going to school part-time and thinking I would be avoiding it, but, you know, there was only 2 hours sleep a day because I was working and chasing and drinking and all of those things. And Uncle Sam really changed my life. For the good. Eventually it turned out to be for the good. But I shared it with my mother and my dad, and a couple weeks later, there we were down at Fort Wayne, and I look around and there's 7 other classmates with me. So I went in not alone. I had eight of us from Belleville High School were there in basic training. And I can't wait to talk about basic training in the future, future Wednesday when we do this. Going into the military was just out of my thought process, out of myself. I didn't know what was going to happened that as long as I had other guys going with me, I just said, well, John Wayne did it. You know, he killed all the Japs, and Audie Murphy got all the Germans. And I do remember as a kid, you know, talking about Audie Murphy and to Hellenbeck and killing them damn Krauts and, you know, all of those expressions about the only good Jap's a dead Jap. And, you know, now I'm in the military, so I guess I'm going to go kill whatever they have over there if that's what I am. That was a life-changing thing, and I'm honored to have served in our great military. No jokes with me. It was life, and the military.
Okay, we're going to continue moving along right here. So we're getting the idea of this whole thing is to talk a little bit about your emotions, how you felt about making that decision, or when you finally got on the bus, or when you finally, you know, somebody dropped you off, or, you know, or kicked you out of the car, or whatever it was. And I know that some of the people that many of us probably went to basic training with, I had a similar incident that John did when I reported to go off to basic training. There were six or seven guys on the same bus with me that I'd gone to high school with that I recognized. Unfortunately, none of them went to Fort Polk. They all went to Fort Dix. I didn't even know where Fort Dix was, but it was in New Jersey, which is down the street, I guess, from what they said. So, moving right along. So we've had Air Force, two armies, and now we're going to go to another army person. And this is Brian Graff. And Brian was in the service from 68 to 71, and he was an E-5, made it to E-5. So, Brian, welcome to There I Was.
Thank you. Thank you, Dale. I was always impressed with my dad's hat. He was a Army Air Corps, flew B-25 bombers. And I said, man, that is great. If I ever have a chance, I want to go to the Air Force. And, you know, Vietnam was always on the news. It was, you know, I was watching it every single night on TV. And I thought, nope, I'm not going to the Air Force because then I'll have to go to Vietnam. So I went to college instead. When I graduated from high school, I was engaged to my high school sweetheart. She had a couple of years yet to go in high school. And we never discussed much about the, you know, Vietnam or the war or anything else. But when I was in high school, and actually I was brought up in a very staunch German Catholic family. My father was a pretty tough guy. And I changed religions because I was engaged to a gal that was Southern Baptist. And I still recall this to this day. If you really want to kill your dad, here's how to do it. I dropped out of college. Well, actually, I came home on a weekend. I said, Dad, I got something to tell you. And he thought I was more nervous then than I was going to Vietnam. I said, Dad, I dropped out of college. I joined the Army, and I changed to Southern Baptist. I'll be back in 4 years. We'll talk about it. Well, I didn't know what to do next, just to back away or get hit or whatever. And I still don't remember the reaction. And the reason why I did that is because when I was in college, many of my college roommates and friends, they were getting drafted. And I wasn't really thinking about the draft at that time, but a lot of people were trying to get deferments, and they would get married, and that didn't help. You know, they tried everything they could to get out of it. And I wasn't really trying to get out of it. I was not drafted, but there was a Army recruiting officer from the 5th Army Division out of Chicago that was a member of our church. And he said, if you want to go in the service, I can keep you from going to Vietnam. I'll get you an MOS that you want to do, right? Wasn't long after that I found out, believe in God, but don't believe in an Army recruiting officer from the 5th Army Division. All he wanted was the numbers. And but I still wasn't convinced I'm not going to Vietnam because I had an MOS that he got me into. So I went to Fort Knox. And when I got to Fort Knox, I still remember this day that my dad dropped me off at Fort Wayne. We got on the Greyhound bus and with the box lunch going down to Fort Knox. It's almost like going to CYO camp when I was a kid. got down to Fort Knox, and I was going up to the barracks with my duffel bag over my shoulder, and some guy ran down the stairs, practically knocked me over, and I turned around and looked at his name tag on his shirt, Bastuba. And Bastuba, if you're out there, I'll find you someday. Terry Bastuba, I went to grade school with him. And he said, Gordy Elwood's here too. So the three of us got into so much trouble as grade school brats, so to speak. We just got into everything. I mean, we did a lot of KP, which I really didn't mind because the cook in basic training was the head chef at Sid's on the Seaway, as we used to call it, Sinbad's in Detroit. And anything you wanted to eat, he'd make you. Make you pizza at night or anything else. So that was a pretty good experience. And I'm looking forward to the next one, you know, about Vietnam experiences. If you've read the book we served or we answered the call, I talk more on the lighter side of Vietnam because we try to do that about the lighter side. And we have some funny stories there. But that's how I got into the service. And I told my dad when I got out, I said, you know, the Army doesn't make a man out of you. It shows you what it takes to be a man.
So we're going to take a little break here for just a moment, and then we'll come back and we're going to draft the other people in the room. You've heard that word draft a few times, right? To come up and tell us their stories. So we want to make sure that you stick around and listen, or this is called There I Was on Veterans Radio.
Well, we're back on Veterans Radio, and There I Was. So going back to VFW Post 423 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and your host, Dale Throneberry.
Here at VFW Post 423, also the home of VVA 310 and American Legion Post 46. And we appreciate and we want to thank everybody that allowed us to utilize their facilities, and we will be using them every Wednesday, the last Wednesday of every month. That's what that sentence was supposed to sound like. And hopefully we can spread the word to our friends and neighbors and families and so forth, and maybe get a few more people out here to join the discussion. So joining us right now with his story of how he got involved with the military and as an Army veteran and a fellow New Jerseyite, and that is Tim, when were you in the service? 65 to 67, and so joining me at the microphone right now is Tim Driscoll, and Tim, thank you very much. Come on down.
Thank you, Dale. There was nothing boring about getting drafted. You did watch the newspapers, you did talk to your friends, and you wonder, boy, what's that going to be like? You know, growing up for me was just a little bit different from most guys. We moved around an awful lot. I had a dad that drank quite a bit. I went to 23 schools before I got drafted. Lived all over New York, New Jersey. And sometimes I was with my family, sometimes I was with foster homes. But you know, no matter where I lived, when you went to school, it was very respectful back then. You know, you learned your courses. You treated people like you should be treated. Everybody in the neighborhood beside your family or whoever was taking care of you could hit you. You really had to behave yourself at all times, you know. The grown-ups were not going to let you really get away with anything. But pretty soon I found out that my mom was having really pretty hard time trying to keep a job and take care of my brother and myself. And it came down to I really have got to quit high school and go get a job. Couldn't get a real good paying one. I'm only 16. But I went and got three. Well, that worked out pretty good. Let's see. If I work this one real good job, an electrical company, that's a pretty good job, and I can take that, and that'll pay for the house and the food and stuff until Mom gets back working again. That'll work out. And then there was another job delivering some papers, and I could do that early in the morning. And then there was a job delivering, at a gas station, taking care of people's automobiles. And I get a quarter for extra quart of oil I would sell. That was good money, and I was good at it and did my job well. And except one day I get home there. By this time, I got a nice car, and everything's going along pretty well, and everything's okay at home. And there's this big envelope in the mailbox. And you know what that means. You're gone with the wind. And I said, geez, look at this. This is going to be different. And like Dale was saying, off we go to Newark, New Jersey, and they turn around and they test you for this and they test you for that. And got down to checking my hearing. And I sit down there, and the guy says, okay, give me the thumbs up when you hear something and the thumbs down when you don't. And he does his thing with the dials and nothing. I don't hear nothing. Hey, maybe I'm going to get out of this. Maybe I'm deaf. I'm going deaf and don't know it. And, you know, after a while, at that point, you know, I was 18. And a little bit probably tough of a life. You don't really respect anybody getting nasty to you. This guy says, look, you're going to be in the Army, and you got to listen to me, and I'm in charge, and you got to start doing this test properly. I said, let me tell you something. I don't care about you. I don't care about your test. I don't care about your Army. I'm not being rude to you. I can't hear. I'm sorry. You know, you ought to shape up. Then we noticed at the same time that the wire's not plugged into the wall. Well, all of a sudden we're friends. We're buddies, you know, thanking me a whole lot. And pretty soon, you know, a few weeks are going by. It's around Christmas time. You know, it's about, actually it was October 18th, that's what it was, and I'm off to Fort Dix, and then, you know, you turn around, and you get to have a whole new way of life, and I want to save the rest of it for actually being in Fort Dix. So that's my story up to this point. Thank you.
You know, it's funny when we listen to ourselves telling our stories of how we tried to avoid getting into the service no matter what we could do. And I was talking to an Iraq, Afghanistan veteran, and it was a female, and she was telling me that she did everything possible to get into the service. She says, because they rejected her initially for some medical issue, and she said, I went to a specialist and got a special letter and so on and so forth so that I could get in the service. And you guys are all talking about how you're trying to, you know, finagle a way out of it. And I don't know if we were finagling, really. I think we were just scared. I mean, this was something that was really the unknown. And, you know, we did see all the movies with Audie Murphy and John Wayne, and they never got hurt. But, or if they did, they got up and they were in another film. And, you know, we were reading the newspapers, and as we were talking about, you know, the history of the Vietnam War in many cases, because all of the people here tonight were involved at that time, is that we started seeing it in the newspapers and on TV. And so that started making it, you know, getting a little bit closer to home. And then maybe you heard about somebody from your local town that didn't make it and so forth. So it did get a little bit serious, and I think we were getting a little nervous about those things. But transitioning gracefully here to to our woman guest for the night. And this is Sandy Wilson, and Sandy was retired from the Army as a captain. She was a nurse in Vietnam, and she's got, I think, a great story just as well to talk about how she got involved in the service. So, Sandy Wilson, come on to the microphone. Thank you.
Let me assure you, I was not afraid of being drafted. But, you know, my oldest brother and I grew up in very close, and he was in this thing called ROTC in order to be able to pay for college. And he was doing his time. And he cheated the government because he got injured during his first year and spent the rest of his military time in rehab and in the hospital and stuff. And I had finished nursing school, and he said, sis, you'd really like the Army. The nurses there are so good and everything like that. And I thought, okay. So I had a nice civilian job. I finally signed my life away buying a new car so I wouldn't have to take the bus anymore. And the recruiter was chasing me, so I sat down and talked to him. He said, that'd probably be pretty good. So they sent me down for a physical. And I wasn't in line with 500 other guys, let me assure you of that. It was the quickest physical that ever was as they rushed me through. And I failed the physical. So I says, okay, we're done with that. And about 6 months later, the recruiter came looking for me again because now they thought I could pass the physical. And I just looked at them. So then they tried to guilt trip me. Just think of all these boys that are being drafted. In this man's world, am I going to have men's rights if I do go? And they looked at me kind of funny. Okay. And it took them a while, and we started negotiating. And finally they said to me, don't worry about going to Vietnam, because we only send the volunteers, and they have to be the brightest and best. Well, they didn't include me. So I agreed to go, but we had to negotiate it to where I went in with a first lieutenant rank instead of a second lieutenant, and it took some while. So I finally go, and I take my car that I have been working for pay for in July and drove it to Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And let me assure you, it was convertible, but back in those days, if you bought a car in the fall or the winter, you didn't get air conditioning living here. It was not air conditioned. And it was, by the time I got to Texas, I was a little bit drenched from sweat.
You know, those of you that are listening to this, you really need to come out on the last Friday of August, or last Wednesday of August. I get this right sooner or later. And follow up with the stories of boot camp or training or whatever it was that they call it where you went, or vacation. I don't know exactly what some of the stories I've heard from our friends here about their boot camp experiences. Some of them were really horrific, and some of them sounded like they went to, you know, summer camp. And I think that that's part of the whole thing that we're anxious to talk about. All right, so we're going to continue right along with our stories right now. And coming up now is we have a Navy guy, CB, you know, CBs can do. And this is Larry San Antoine, and Larry was in the service from 64 to 70. I don't know, he did unlimited tours in Vietnam, and he got out as an E-4. What was an E-4 in the Navy?
Third class.
Okay. A petty.
Well, my saga starts in 1964. I was a junior in high school, playing football, playing baseball, enjoying life like John, chasing girls, or hopefully chasing girls. And one day, the recruiters came through the high school, talked to the Air Force. Okay. Talked to the Army. I didn't like their uniforms. Talked to the Marines. I liked them. Then I talked to the Navy guy, and his first question to me, he says, what kind of experience do you have? I says, well, I worked construction with my dad since I was 8 years old. He says, oh, you want to be a CB? I said, what the hell is a CB? He says, well, you do construction. You know, you're a plumber, you're an electrician, you're a builder. And we have a reserve unit right here in Detroit down at Broadhead Naval Army. You can join it and do your reserve time. You do 6 years, two, two, and two, 2 years active. I said, He says, and you do nine-month tours overseas, just like the regular Navy. And the Seabees go to Hollyloch, Scotland for 9 months and come back for 3 months, then go to Rota, Spain for 9 months and come back for 3 months. I said, oh, God, sign me up. He says, well, you're 16. You got to have your dad sign. I says, well, give me the paperwork. So that night I brought the papers to my dad, and I said, I'm joining the Seabees. He says, what the hell is a Seabee? And I said, well, construction. He says, okay, I'll sign. So joined the RMCB 26, Broadhead Naval Armory. I did my 2 years ready reserve, going to meetings, building stuff, working out all over the place. And then, unfortunately, in 64, there wasn't much going on in Vietnam, but when I went active duty in 66, well, my when I went to the East Coast to find out where I was going, and they give you a sheet that says, well, name three places you want to go. And I said, oh, Holly Lock, Scotland, Rota, Spain, and Ireland. And the gunny sergeant kind of laughed. He says, well, he crossed them off. He put Vietnam, Vietnam, Vietnam. And so that was my introduction into the Seabees. I did spend between my junior and senior year at boot camp 11 weeks at Broadhead Naval Army, which I will maybe talk about next month when we're here. But basically that was my introduction. I didn't get drafted. I wasn't old enough at that time. I did get a draft notice, though, when I was 16 for my cousin who has the same name. But I brought it to him and gave it to him, and so he was happy. But basically that was how I was introduced to the service and Vietnam. Thank you.
Any other volunteers? Want to tell us how you got involved in the service? Yes, I would. All right, so we're coming from way back in our crowded facilities here. We've got Horace Fraser. Yeah, how did you decide that you were going to join the military? Or did you?
After this was being planned, you asked me to bring my guitar, so I threw it in the ride and brought it.
Oh, okay. Well,
my name is Horace Fraser, Jr. I was drafted. I registered for the draft when I lived in San Bernardino, California. And I was still in high school, my senior year. And I had to go register, and I went and registered. And after registering, I wind up going to junior college for a few months. After going to college, I dropped out to move back to Michigan, where I was born, Ypsilanti, Michigan. And I got a job working at Ford Motor Company, Rawsonville plant. Upon finding out, I got this letter from my uncle saying, greetings from the President of the United States. It's time to go take a physical. So I, wind up going down to Wayne, Fort Wayne, to take my physical. I passed my physical. And so I started thinking, well, it's time to start packing up my things and getting ready to go into the service. I was going to quit my job at Ford Motor Company because I didn't know that to see a union rep at the time that they would instruct you to not quit your job but go take a military leave of absence. So that's what I did once the union representative got a hold of me and found that I was being drafted. So I had a job to return to after I came home from the service. My first duty station or my basic was Fort Ord, California. I decided to go back to California because that's where my parents was at. So I got inducted into the service in L.A. where they took us up to Fort Ord, California. My dad took me to the, what is it? It was the Orange Show. It's like a fairgrounds for San Bernardino. They have a lot of different shows there and stuff like that and fairs and stuff. And that's what was the place where all of the buses met to take people down to LA to go to the induction center there and then go up to Fort Ord, California. So I got a chance to say goodbye to my folks. My dad, while I was there, he'd been a minister, he decided to stick a testament in my hand and kind of say, okay, see you later. You got my blessings. So I think I kept that testament throughout the whole service of my time. Once I finished basic at Fort Ord, my mom came up from San Bernardino and picked with my sister that lived in San Francisco, and they came to my graduation, and I went in like a 140-pound weakling, and I think by the time that they saw me, I was 180 pounds or 85, you know, big and bulky and everything. They almost didn't recognize me with all the other troops that was out there in the parade field. I got my orders to go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Yes, we're going to get coming back. Does anybody else want to go? Okay, so we got another Air Force gentleman here. I use the term loosely. both. So the idea is Vance McCrum, who is the United States Air Force dog handler, ARF, and he went in way back. I think he was in the Civil War, but I'm not sure. So he'll probably tell us about how Lincoln sent him the letter.
Thank you, Dale. My name is Vance McCrum, and I did enlist in the United States Air Force. I pre-enlisted in high school. We had recruiters that came to our high school, Lincoln High School, here in the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area, Lincoln Consolidated High School, and there were all branches of service recruiters there ganging up on us. This was in early 1963. Vietnam was not in the news, didn't know what it was or where it was, but the Air Force recruiter was successful in convincing me that that's where I needed to go. Plus, I had a love of aircraft, you know, just seeing them fly, and I used to draw pictures of them when I was a little kid. And so I pre-enlisted in my senior year in high school. And I took a deferment, if you will, for 6 months before I was actually inducted. I had all the physicals and did all the tests and stood around in my underwear and wondering why all these guys were wearing boxers and I'm not. I'm wearing these, you know, whitey tighties and stuff, you know, which were quickly changed much later. And as you've heard some of the other stories about the physicals and stuff, then the branch of service that you were going to didn't determine what kind of physical you got. We all got the same physicals. I took a 6 months deferment because I figured once I was in the Air Force, I wouldn't be able to sleep till noon after I graduated from high school in June of 1963. I was in the Air Force from January 17th, 1963, or 64 through January the 17th, 1967. Thank you.
Do I have a story?
Do you have a story, Bob?
I have a story. It'll have to be a quick one, but I have a story. How much time do we have?
You probably have about 5 minutes or so.
I'll take three.
Okay.
All right, here we go. 2 weeks after high school, which most of us really didn't have much planned, sitting at a little league game with a fellow by the name of Phil Zimmerman I went to school with, we're watching. He says, you know, why don't we go in the Army on the buddy plan? I hadn't even thought about that, going anywhere. 2 weeks after high school, where the heck was I going to go? What was I going to do? And he says, let's go in the Army buddy plan. Sounds like a good deal to me. How do we do all that? Well, we found out was 3 years. And, you know, years mean a lot to me. So I volunteered for the draft, and so did Phil. We went down to Fort Street, Detroit, and signed up for the draft, and I've completely actually forgot about it. You're right. Somebody else said it was 6 weeks, and sure enough, it was 6 weeks and got the letter. There it is. I'm going in the Army. and down to Fort Wayne. And I can see a couple of heads here shaking their heads. Yeah, good old Fort Wayne. And it was, I don't know, what was it, 0600, 0500 we had to be there, 0700 something, really, yeah. John, was that something like that? Yeah, it was early, but it wasn't too bad. There was Mom and Dad. Remember, I had my orders in my hand. And I looked at that gatehouse, and that was the portal. It was walking through a fog. Because from then on, when I was outside, I looked back to Mom and Dad. Mom said, "Now you do what the sergeant says." "Yeah, sure, Ma." "Yeah, do what the sergeant and Dad. Go get him, kid." And when I walked up to the guardhouse, I turned around. They were gone. They were gone. And I looked, and there it was, walked through the portal. I don't know why I thought I was going to then continue to walk over to the building where they were going to swear us in. That was the last time you see anybody walking around, right? Darn right. You get in a Jeep, you travel. Wait here. And that was, yes, Fort Wayne. Wait here. They came with a 3/4 ton truck, took us over to the building. That building's still there, by the way. Fort Wayne is still there, and so is that building. They swore us in. Took us on buses to the train station.
We took a train.
I mean, and all of it, we were sworn in, of course, so we were all in. We got our lunch or dinner or whatever on the train, and there we were headed for Fort Knox, Louisville. Did I say it right? Yeah, the guys are smiling. Louisville, sure, do that in town, you're dead man. So there we were. We came into Louisville. We got on the buses. We went to the barracks. Standing outside the barracks, I remember this, he had a big box, and there was about 40 of us, and he said, "I want you to put any weapons, dirty pictures, dirty jokes, everything that you have in that box." Now, you know who got that box later, huh? Come on, guys. And sure enough, there they, no knives, and some of the guys had blades, because we hadn't been searched anything. We'd been all night on the train. So they didn't fill the box, but they put a lot of stuff in there. Welcome to the U.S. Army, and I have 2 years to go.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. It's interesting the way that everybody kind of got into this service. I was thinking everybody, some of you were mentioning recruiters coming to talk to you, and I guess I don't remember recruiters at the high school in New Jersey. Maybe they didn't want us. I don't know. Maybe that. That could have been, too. That could have been, too. It turns out it's really kind of interesting. And I want to thank everybody for sharing their stories this evening. And next month, we are going to be talking about basic training. And we're going to be talking about what went on there and who was your favorite sergeant and some of the other adventures that you might have had in basic training. So we're hoping that you will all come back and join us here on There I Was. On the last Wednesday of August is when it's going to be. So tell your friends, tell anybody that you can think of, have them come on out. I think this has been fun and helpful, and it's interesting to find out what other people have gone through. So until next time, you are dismissed.